Well, good morning, friends, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kelly S., and I am a recovered compulsive and bulimic from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Today is Tuesday, October 22nd, 2024, and this is the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Vision meeting. Today, we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are in We Agnostics, and page 54, second paragraph, it starts, "Imagine life without faith," through that one paragraph ending with, "At least so the chemist said," commenting on just that one paragraph. So today's readers are 12 Steps, Kathy C., 12 Traditions, Charlotte W., Craig F. will be reading our text, Susan S.H. reading page 164, and Rena L. is our backup reader today. Newcomer greeter is Chris W., and our second hour host is going to be Anne Marie M. The reference number for yesterday, if you got your pen and paper ready, for Monday, October 21st, 2024, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 21845, 21845, and the 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 21846, 21846. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, quote, "Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers," end quote. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Kathy C. to read the 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, family. This is Kathy C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from New York, the 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do this service.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy C. All right, so now it will be Charlotte W. reading the 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Good morning, Charla.
Okay, good morning. The 12 Traditions. Our number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous. except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous to remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn in public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you so much for allowing me to be service.
Well, thank you so much, Charlotte W. Okay, guys, here's how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share. But we do ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book meant to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are in We Agnostic, page 54, second paragraph. It says, imagine life without faith, through that one paragraph ending with, at least so the chemist said, and we'll be commenting on that one paragraph. And my friend Craig F. lives right here by me, is going to get us started. Good morning, Craig. Good to hear you.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Craig F., recovered in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, and it's good to be here and awake, but this is an awful heavy paragraph for such early thought. Imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life, of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points, yet there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling on to a destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seem more intelligent than that, at least so the chemist said. Well, where to begin? First of all, he's made a mistake here. You can't prove that a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. It is the definition of a straight line that it's the shortest distance between two points, which is really the kind of the crux of the issue here. You can't prove life. You can't. There are certain things that you look at that make sense, that your mind sees and you know are true, but we just have to start with that as a truth. Is there life? Am I alive? I think, therefore I am. It was how the philosophers say it. And here he's saying, how do you prove life? How do you exist on pure reason, and you can't. No matter what you do, no matter how much you know, no matter how good your computational skills and reasoning are, you live on faith. At some point, you live on faith. I could list and bore you all day long on examples of how we live on faith. You know, when we turn on the light switch, we have faith that the light will come on. When we work on a computer, most of us only at best have a rudimentary understanding of how that computer works. But we have faith that it has given us the right answers. We have faith that it is functioning the way it should. We live on faith every day. And so to say that we can't have faith in a power greater than ourselves, when we see it working in ourselves and we see it working in others, is folly. It works. We can see it works. A straight line is the shortest distance between two points. We can see it, so we define it that way. We define life as being something beyond pure reason, something beyond pure science, something beyond the pure predictability of an equation, that it is that it's more beautiful than that, that it's more alive than that. And so in spite of the fact that he kind of made a bobble there, we can forgive that, because the bobble itself proves his point. That there is faith, and without faith,
that's kind, Craig.
Without faith, then there's nothing. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Craig, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, for getting us started. So now we are going to open up the meeting for sharing. And although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others can share their experience too. So if you shared last Friday or yesterday on any vision meeting, please allow others to have the opportunity to share. And please keep your shares to about 3 minutes. I'll remind you when time's up. Give me your first name, initial of your last, and where you're calling from. I'm ready.
Melissa Saint.
Melissa. This is your chance, guys.
Margaret D., Georgia.
Margaret D.
Judith S.P.
Judith S.P.
Chris S., Georgia.
Chris
Katie G.
S. Katie G.
Sherry A.
Sherry A.
10.
Just from Florida, North Carolina.
Ken, is there Ken?
Ten. Like T, like the sun ten.
Oh, ten.
All right. Nancy L.
Nancy L. All right. Well,
can anybody hear me?
I can.
Paul P.
All right, Paul P, I got you.
Stephanie L. from Pennsylvania.
Stephanie, I can barely hear you, and you're real choppy, so you may need to say something before you get to share. Okay, so let's stop there. We've got a good lineup. Melissa C., Margaret D., Judith S.P., Chris S., Katie G., Sherry A., I think it was 10, Nancy L., Paul P., Stephanie L. Everybody, please make sure you're muted again, star once, when you have a quiet meeting. We'll get started with Melissa C., followed by Margaret D. Good morning, Melissa.
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for your service this morning. My name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And, you know, like, I don't know about all these theories. I don't know about, like, straight lines. But I know that that my life is not just pure reason. You know, I know that, like, to the depths of me. I think, you know, I had a conversation with somebody I love recently who, you know, this person means a lot to me. We were talking, and he's had a lot of difficulty in his life. And he said to me, you know, we were talking about God and faith, and he said, well, there is no God. And he said it with such, like, anger. And he said, it's just a trick. He's like, you know, we've, as a species, we had this evolutionary kind of flaw that happened. So we made up God in order to make ourselves feel okay. And when he said that to me, like, it hurt. It hurt in you know, we're given a choice. I can either go through life believing that there is nothing, you know, that it's all just I'm nothing, it's nothing, we're all just like going on like this, like some sort of, you know, just a nothingness, and that there is no great meaning. Or I can actually say, no, that one doesn't work for me. And really what I shared with him is what I, you know, would share with others, is that which is the one that's going to give you comfort, purpose, meaning, and joy in your life? And for me, it's a belief in God. And whether it's based on reason or not, there are lots of things in my life that mean the world to me that aren't necessarily based on reason, but it's just the way that I feel, and it's the thing that gives me direction and meaning and purpose in life. And so for me, when I made a decision that God was going to be everything or nothing, my life got incredibly better, you know, regardless of whatever circumstances were happening. I feel like there's an ultimate purpose and a reason. And I'm grateful that I don't believe the way that he believed. And, you know, I hope that for him that there's comfort in that, but there would be no comfort in that for me. And thanks for that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Melissa C. from New York. All right, next up, Margaret D., followed by Judith S. P. Good morning, Margaret.
Hey, good morning. Hi, everybody. This chapter is, I so look forward to the whole chapter when we get here. It's like a delight to me. So let me get my thoughts in order here again. Further on in the book, and this is I'm kind of a spoiler, but that's okay. We're told that all of our problems come from selfishness or self-centeredness. That's the root. So fear comes from selfishness or self-centeredness. It's the idea that we're either afraid that we're going to lose something that we've already got or not get something that we want to have. And then there's all other kinds of problems that come out of that brain set that is called selfishness or self-centeredness. My reason keeps me caught in selfishness or self-centeredness because, after all, it's all about me, isn't it? Well, of course it is, Margaret. And I've got this wonderful brain that's going to and it is a God-given brain, so I'm not being sarcastic or, you know, trying to belittle my brain or anybody else's brain. It's just that it's not enough. It's just not enough. And if I've lived with selfishness and self-centeredness all my life, which I have, and I see that it's not, or what I did see, was that it's not getting me anywhere except in a worse position, which actually there's another selfish or self-centered idea. But it's like God just gently guides us to faith. And when I decided that I just couldn't handle my own life, you know, it was just my best thinking was getting me into worse and worse situations. Then faith just stepped in and said, okay, we're just going to, you know, tackle a different, we'll try something different. And faith said, okay, well, let's go. And then everything changed. I know that the Big Book uses the example of electricity. I like the example of AAA. When my car breaks down, if I'm a member of AAA.
Margaret, that's time.
Guess what? With that, I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Margaret D. from Georgia. Next up, we have Judith S.P., followed by Chris S. Good morning, Judith. Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Judith S.P. from Maryland. Gratefully recovered. Thank you, God, for right now. And thank you, Kelly, and everyone for being here. Imagine a life without faith. Were nothing left of pure reason, it wouldn't be life. Well, that was my life. I don't have to imagine a life without faith because even though from a little wee one, I believed in something. I did call a God. God, please help me get a good grade on this test. God, please let that little boy want to be with me and not my friend Annette, and so forth. But once I found my way into food as my source of comfort and relief from a lot of things I did not know and I did not understand, my life was unmanageable. And I didn't have any faith. I always felt like I was the kid never picked for the team or whatever. Just not belonging. So when it asks, can you imagine a life without faith? Absolutely. My life before recovery was 150% without faith. And the other night I got very distressed about something that I read. And I just took a pause instead of getting frustrated. And I heard God say to me, Judith, diversity is diversity. That means the tent is big enough for every single being on this earth. You, my child, are my creation, and you have a right to be here, and you are living a life that is really positive right now. But you are in no way in a position to judge or take an inventory of another human being's life. If that is in faith, that I heard those words, and I know that I felt such relief afterwards, that now that I'm living in recovery one day at a time, I'm able to give to others what I was never able to give to myself because I didn't have faith that a power greater than myself is what I needed to walk through this magnificent life. And I will close with this. Every morning in my prayer, I say, thank you, God, for giving me breath to be in this life today. I'm already a winner. So I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to take sides in my own head, more so than with other people. So absolutely, I live in faith, and for me it works. As long as I work it. Thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much, Judith S.P. from Maryland. Next up, we have Chris S., followed by Katie G. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, good morning, Chris, compulsive overeater. Thank you, everyone, for your service and for today. This chapter has been very apropos to my current journey in recovery. I do have faith, and I've always had faith, but I never knew what I had faith in. And I have faith that my food, even when it is, you know, what I think is very small, I have faith that it will be enough. And I have, I believe that my conception of a higher power is going to take care of me when it comes to my food. And, you know, I talked to my sponsor about it and all that. The food is where it should be. But I am slowly coming to the realization that I put my faith in everything else but God when it comes to anything else in life. And it's not even the way I would think that faith would look. I put faith in a manager that that doesn't seem to really like me. But I put my faith that as long as this guy likes me, everything will be okay. I put my faith in that, you know, if I can just do this or that or get what I want, then I'm going to be okay. That's not how, you know, it works from what I'm being told and I read. And I have this information, a friend of mine worded it this way, I have this information that I need to put my faith into my higher power in everything, my entire life. And I have that information, but what am I going to do with it? Because my actions certainly do not seem to correlate to that, because I still put my faith in everything else but God when it comes to everything else in life. And for whatever reason, I believe and trust for 3-something years that God can handle my food, which was always my biggest problem my entire life. But my actions would say that I do not trust God when it comes to anything else in my life. I have to control it somehow. And whenever I try to control it, it just falls to pieces. I appreciate this reading and this chapter. It's very helpful to where I am currently in my recovery. And I will commit today that I'm going to try my best to put everything in the hands of God and not try to control everything. I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Chris S. from Georgia. Next up, we have Katie G. followed by Sherry A. Good morning, Katie.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for taking the meeting. Good morning, everyone. Katie G. recovered in Boston. Yeah, I can fundamentally say that majority of this paragraph makes absolutely no sense to me. I don't get it. I don't get the straight line. I'm going to call Craig after the meeting. Hopefully he can help me understand, but I don't care. And the reason I'm saying this is not because We Agnostics is not important. It is. It's my favorite chapter. It's not because Overeaters Anonymous isn't important. It is fundamentally the most formative thing that has ever happened to my life. I've been in the room for 20 years. But I say I don't know today because I never could say that before, right? Like, I have always worshiped myself. And, you know, I remember coming home from college and talking to my parents and talking over people and just needing to fight. You know, my first year in recovery, I had like 20 sponsors because I was like, help me, tell me what to do. And then they told me, and I was, what? I was like, who do you think you are? And I was profoundly afraid of surrendering. I was profoundly afraid of saying, you know what? I don't know why the ocean moves in and out. Or even if you could explain it to me today, like, I don't care. I know it works. And that's how I feel about recovery. I have so much faith because the first time that I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, I felt home. I felt deep down inside me was the fundamental idea of something. Something was happening because you all were sharing my story. You all were saying that food was not your problem. It was the only solution you'd ever applied to your problem. You know, and when I look at human bodies and I look at the ocean and I look at the world, I know that there is a God. I just can't doubt it. But if you're still fighting me, cool, because at the end of my life, if I go through this life praying to God, you know, sponsoring others, helping others, giving of myself, living St. Francis of Assisi, which is the solution to all my life, let's say I do that, right, and I die, and there's no God, I don't care because I will have lived the most joyous life that is possible for me as a human being. And I owe that to OA. Love you guys.
Well, thank you so much, Katie G. from Boston. Next up, we have Sherry A. followed by Tan. Sherry, where are you calling from?
Good morning, everybody. Calling from Illinois, this is Sherry A., a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. So grateful to hear these words this morning, and man, the shares are so helpful. I wanted just to share my experience, which is that worshiping my finite reason, whatever, I mean, I don't even know if I could, like, categorize what I was doing in the food as rational thinking. I don't think that was rational thinking. And one of the thoughts that came as I was listening to the reading is, you know, folks in the scientific community say, you know, there's one thing that that trumps science, and that's better science. And so I just am really aware this morning that there's something that trumps my experience of trying to run my life on self-will, and that's the experience that something bigger than me that I can't ever prove stopped me from hurting myself with food. That's the experience I have. And as a newcomer, I didn't have to have faith. I just had to believe that the evidence in front of me that other people were not hurting themselves with food was enough evidence to believe that there was something bigger. And so I love that we agnostics doesn't demand that I believe anything. It just asked me to be willing to believe. That's it. And that is all that has to happen. And I'm so glad that that happened to me. And I'm so glad for this meeting. And I just wish you all a beautiful day.
Well, thank you, Sherry A. from Illinois. Next up, we have Tan, I think, and Nancy L. Tan, can you spell your name and initial and where you're from?
Hi, this is Tan. My first name is T-A-N. My initial is K, and I'm from Florida. Can you hear me?
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the meeting and for everyone that is doing service. So I think I didn't know that I would speak today because, you know, I'm in a hotel room at the moment, but the passage is just something that is really fitting to my journey at the moment. Because I have the last couple of weeks really thinking about my relationship with God. What does God mean to me? And it changes. It changes a little. It's because, you know, I'm someone who doesn't like to be dependent. And I have that's the issue with an addict. Yeah. He wants to control him. He doesn't want to be dependent. But there are a couple of things that I'm definitely dependent. I'm dependent on the air that I breathe. I'm dependent on the heart that beats. I'm dependent on many things, and I'm not controlling them. I'm not doing them. So something else is doing it. And that's something else we can call God, or we can call that I'm not. I'm not that. The whole thing about faith, I mean, for me, I mean, English is not my first language, so I interpret faith as something that I can trust. I can build my life on it, so I can trust it. It has to be there the whole time. Yeah. But what is there the whole time? Because this world changes, my thoughts change, the people that I meet change, everything changes. But there are a couple of things that are self-evident, that are always there. And the one thing that is self-evident is that I exist. You don't have to think about it. If somebody asks you, do you exist? You don't have to do a math calculation or look in a book. You know that you exist. So I exist. The second thing is I'm conscious. I'm conscious. You know, you don't have to, are you a conscious being? No, I'm conscious and I exist. And everything else changes. It comes into my consciousness, the people, the thoughts. My body changes the whole time. Everything changes, my thoughts. But where is the love? Because at some point of time, at least in the journey of an overeater, there is a lack of love. And where is the love? Because I thought my faith and my love is in food, and that didn't work. So where is the love? And the funny thing is, the love is everywhere when you stop and basically be aware. Because if I look at my children and my wife and my dog and the ocean.
That's time, Pam.
Just one sentence. Thank you so much. And if I just look at these things and there's no thought, then there's love. So it's everywhere. Thanks a lot for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, Tan K from Florida. All right, guys, before we move on, let me remind everybody where we're at if you came in late. We are in We Agnostics, page 54, second paragraph. It says, imagine life without faith, through that one paragraph ending with at least so the chemists say. And next up, we have Nancy L. followed by Paul P. Good morning, Nancy. Where are you calling from?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Nancy L., recovered in Arizona for today. Yeah, without faith. My husband and I decided to take a trip Sunday morning, a three-hour trip up to Flagstaff, Arizona. It's a beautiful place to go. And, you know, I had a little bit of doubt there for a minute or two. Thank God, not for hours and hours like it used to be, because I am a woman of faith. I didn't used to be. I always had to plan and fix and ruminate over things till I drove myself crazy. But this time, I thought, yeah, let's take this little trip. Will the weather be good? Will the car break down? Will I be able to stay abstinent? You know, in my faith, we learn without faith, it's impossible to please God. I want to please God. I want to please my husband. He doesn't like to see me worried and wringing my hands and wondering about this and that and the other. So it's by faith that we went. We packed our stuff. We had a great trip. We went up. We got to see some things that we didn't even plan on seeing, like an observatory, etc. We had a very good time, and I didn't have to plan and figure and worry about every little thing. God kept me abstinent. Sure, I had to do some planning, but you know, for me, I was in the food, crazy in the food for about 5 decades. I've been free from that monkey chatter in my head for over 20 years now, been living in a healthy body. My doctor says, Nancy, your heart loves your weight. All of that has been by faith. It's been by faith to trust God to get me through each day. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Nancy L. from Arizona. Next up, we have Paul P. followed by Stephanie L. Paul, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Rhode Island. Paul P., compulsive reader. And this paragraph to me is something I needed, because I have to believe in my higher power. Before program, I was lost. I didn't have one. But with this, it rejuvenated my soul and my spirit to continue on. And right now, I've been in program for 3 years and at a healthy weight, finally, and it's under control. Thank you to my higher power, and thank you to every one of you people out there that helped me as well. Thank you, and have a great day, and I'll pass.
Well, thanks so much, Paul P. from Rhode Island. Next up, we have Stephanie L., and then we'll be opening up for more shares. Hey, good morning, Stephanie. Where are you calling from? Stephanie, star one. Well, we will circle back to Stephanie. So All right, guys, so if you haven't shared in the last 3 days, meaning last Friday or yesterday on any vision meeting, we'd love to hear from you. Who'd like to share?
Sonia M. from Pennsylvania.
Erin K.
Connie G.
Connie. I got you, Sonia, Erin, and Connie.
Nancy
Jane F.
Nancy, Jane.
Amy G.
Russ Ann B.
Ashley F.
Ashley, let's stop there. Okay, here's who I have. Sonia, Erin K., Connie, Nancy C., Jane P., Amy G., Ross Ann, and Ashley F. So I'm missing last initials and where you're calling from, so just give me that when it's your turn. So Sonia, you are up, followed by Erin K. Sonia, what's the initial of your last name and where are you calling from?
Good morning. This is Sonia S., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you for your service. What comes to mind to me with this passage is a prayer that my parents prayed for most of their life for my brother, Ted, who is a philosopher, and in particular, he teaches logic. And he's an atheist, and their prayer was, may Ted's heart remain restless until he finds peace in God. And when I came into recovery, my heart started to melt, and I started to feel God's peace. And I also was in another food program for 12 years, and it didn't feel right. And I was praying, I was like, God, please, I need a food program that works. And guess what? A miracle happened. I came to OA Vision. My father passed 2 years ago, and the quote at his funeral was, if God is risen, nothing else matters. If God has not risen, nothing else matters. So for me, I'd rather live in recovery in this lifetime rather than in a living hell. So thanks for letting me share.
Well, thanks so much, Sonia S. from Pennsylvania. Next up, Erin K., followed by Connie. Good morning, Erin.
Morning, Kelly. Thanks for your service. This is Erin K., recovered compulsive overeater in Michigan. Bill kind of goes out on a limb with this paragraph. Pretty trippy, but it just really hits me, this paragraph. I like it a lot. It makes me think about how life is a series, really, of decisions, you know, some minuscule and some big. And all decisions deal in uncertainty. We have to choose a path when we don't know where it's going to lead. And I kind of feel like in the first couple sentences here, Bill is setting up a dichotomy between faith and reason, saying they're kind of mutually exclusive. But I really don't think that that's true. I think it's a false dichotomy. And I think about the way that I was trained to think as a physician. You know, we think in probabilities. We consider, you know, like if you go to your doctor and your toe hurts, they're not going to order an MRI of your brain, right? Because that makes no sense. You know, it's very unlikely something is wrong with your brain if your toe hurts. You know, so they're always, using the likelihood that they're going to find something when they order a test or when ordering a medication or treatment, the likelihood that that is going to help you. But at the heart of a probability is still that uncertainty. And faith, I believe, is sitting in the discomfort of uncertainty. And, you know, I really lean very heavily on my intellect and my reason for most of, you know, my life. While P.S., I was doing completely irrational things with food and exercise and all the rest of it. And when I came to OA, I realized, you know, recovery really was abandoning the 100% probability, the certainty of the misery that I was in with the food and the way I was living life, and embracing the uncertainty that I too could recover if I let go and followed the steps, you know, and took direction from someone that told me, hey, here's the evidence in my own life. And I kept hearing that over and over again from people, you know, and it's like, you consider the evidence. You can use your reason to look at the evidence, you know, that you're hearing on the line and around you in the rooms, virtual or real. And I think this book gives us a really reassuring probability when it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And they're talking, Bill's talking about the steps. So those are my thoughts on that. Thanks, Kelly. I'll pass.
Well, thanks so much, Erin K. from Michigan. All right, let's see. We have Connie, followed by Nancy C. Connie, what's the initial of your last name and where are you calling from?
Connie G., and I'm calling from Texas.
All right.
My name is Connie G., a recovering compulsive overeater. In this chapter about faith, I really need to hear this morning. I want to thank all of you guys for your service as well. I came into OA with the desperation, I've got to do something about my food. And I don't know who this higher power is going to be. I don't know what it's going to be. I was raised a Christian, believing in my higher power is God. But actually believing and practicing is two different things. And learning the principles of the steps, you know, having faith and courage and changing what you can. And I didn't know how I was going to do that. I didn't know who was going to do that. And here I am 3.5 years later, abstinent, one day at a time, not perfect, working on my program because life gets lifey. And every time I think I've got it, something comes along where I have to say, you know, you got to have faith. Where is your faith? And something just happened to me at work that just pretty much devastated me. And I was totally taken by surprise, blindsided by this event. But I turned around and had to say, you know, I have to worry about my integrity and my character, not my reputation. And my higher power will take care of it. And I would have never done that before. I would have wanted to get revenge. I would have wanted to figure out how to fix this myself. But this was one of those situations where, for me, my faith had to be surrender. And I had to surrender and let go and let God. And that's what this paragraph says. Surrender. Believe in something more powerful than yourself. So thank you for letting me share, and thank you guys for your service.
Well, thank you so much, Connie G. from Texas. Next up, Nancy C., followed by Jane F. Good morning, Nancy.
Hey, good morning, Kelly. Thank you for your service. Thank you for everyone on the line doing service. Nancy C., grateful you were this morning in Michigan. And everyone was talking today, the word entitlement just kept screaming in my brain. I'm entitled to all this stuff, all of this reason stuff. I'm entitled to it. The lights go on because I'm entitled. I breathe, I'm entitled. But when it comes to that faith of somebody taking care of me, my brain snaps. My thought of somebody or something caring about me is no, all this external stuff I'm entitled to. But when it comes to me, being, I'm not entitled to anything. And that is where this program stepped in and said, oh, but who you are, because deep down inside, every man, woman, and child, there is this fundamental belief in God. And he was obscure, but I realized I'm entitled to that. Hey, I know I'm entitled to being saved. I'm entitled to understanding, to helping, to being compassionate and tolerant and loving. That I never had. Entitlement part was all the bells and whistles of the exterior. Today, what's important to me is working these steps, working with other folks, and being entitled to a life of being happy, joyous, and free. Thanks, Kelly. I pass.
Well, thanks so much, Nancy C. from Michigan. Next up, I think it's Jane F. I can't read my own writing. Followed by Amy G. Jane, is that the initial of your last name, and where are you calling from?
Yes, good morning, everybody. My name is Jane F., as in Sparky.
And I'm calling from New Hampshire. Actually, no, I'm in Virginia. I have to be honest. Thank you for your service. Thank you for everyone. I'm just so grateful to be here this morning, and I have faith that God will help me to say what he wants me to say, when and how he wants me to say it. And I've been saying that to myself at meetings over the years for the last 15 and a half years. And, you know, today I really truly believe it. You know, if I was writing a couple notes and then I thought to myself, no, it's not about what I want to say. It's what God wants me to say. So the one word that stuck out in this whole paragraph, I can't figure it out. Don't need to, don't want to, don't care to, but it's faith. And I remember years ago when I was in my early recovery in our parent program, I was going to a morning meeting every day at like, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning, I think, and we was in the basement of a church, and every time I'd walk down the stairs, there was an office there, and on the office door was a like a bumper sticker, and it said, faith is a verb. And I remember just seeing that and every day thinking about that, and it just not really making sense to me, but I knew that it was something very important in my life, but I just didn't get it, you know. But thank God I just kept coming, and from our parent program, I found my way to OA, and then my way to this miraculous phone meeting that I have learned so much on. And here I am today. So I looked up faith today, and what came up was this beautiful saying that was basically the way I live my life today, just today, that faith is a muscle that I must keep working diligently. And it's not about the strength of my faith, but it's about the strength of the one that I have faith in today, and that's God. And God has brought me through so, so much. And it's like when I woke this morning, I said, God, thank you for this new day, and God, I love you. And it's like thank you for loving me. And it's just all new stuff for me. It's God is everything for me today, and I never could say that before. I know I was taking credit for my recovery in places. And I had to get honest with my sponsor and other fellows in this fellowship that, you know, it's not about me. It's God is doing this for me. This transformation is just amazing, but I have to let go. And I have to do the work. And the work for me is weaving the steps into my life every day. And spending time, my time with God this morning was so beautiful. It evolves. It changes from day to day. And just sometimes I just sit quietly and have a conversation with God. And it's just so beautiful. And for me today, acceptance of who I am and what I am and the surrender to that fact just allows me to be joyous and free today like I haven't been before. And got me to a place of food neutrality again, the second time in my life. And as a chef and an Italian, somebody who loves to eat, this is a miracle.
That's God.
So thanks for letting me share in my pen.
Thank you so much, Jane S. from Virginia. And Amy G., you're going to be our last share, so Russ Ann and Ashley, hope you can stay on for the second hour. Good morning, Amy. Amy, star one. Can't hear you, Amy. Okay, well, we will move on to Roxanne. Roxanne, are you there?
Good morning, Kelly. I am here. And
okay.
I'm Roxanne B. from Michigan, and I just want to say good morning to all of my fellows and thank everyone for their extraordinary service. I just love divine timing. This idea that God is in everything, and we can see evidence of that when things that I might normally call coincidences come up. Yes, and I want to just talk about one of those and what I learned from it. Yesterday, I lost my keys that hold my house key and my car key, and I did have a backup house key, but the car key I think takes some time to get, and I'm leaving town later today. And I am grateful for the 10th step. I really use the 10th step. And yesterday was a day when I feel like I was able to connect with my higher power and tap into this divine wisdom through my fellows because I reached out for help with this issue. And the way that this connects to faith is that when I lose something, I know that it's a time for me to not be the director, for me to surrender to my higher power and trust that God will take care of it. But if I'm leaving town in less than 24 hours, can I really trust God to act in a timely manner? I know God will remove my character defects, but on his schedule, not mine. So not only was I struggling with trusting, but then the feedback I got from a fellow is that I was giving myself a hard time because my faith was not perfect. My faith and trust and reliance on a higher power was not perfect, that I realized it had some weak spots, that I couldn't completely relax without finding my keys. And, you know, all I can say is even when I don't have the faith or the trust or the serenity, I do the work. I do the work. And so I made those 10-step calls and I got down on my knees and I continued to pray. It's a prayer of trust, and I can't think of it in this moment, but I continued to pray. And later on that night, my keys were on the hook next to the refrigerator, which is normally where I put them. I know that I had looked in that spot before, and they weren't there. I can't explain how they appeared, but that doesn't matter. I was given evidence once again that I am not alone in this world, that God is with me. And that doesn't mean I'm going to get everything that I want or think I need. But I have so much evidence that I have not been abandoned and that my faith, even though it's a little weak sometimes.
That's time, Roxanne.
I am practicing my faith. And for that, I'm so grateful. Thanks, everybody.
Well, thank you so much, Roxanne from Michigan. Great meeting, guys. So thank you to everybody who shared and all you guys out there. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study where we'll continue with this paragraph. The share ID for today, October 22nd, 2024, is 21848. 21848. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Susan S.H., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you, Kelly. Yeah, this is Susan S.H. in St. Mary's, Ohio, a recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you